Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you leave? The tears are falling from your face.
Well, they say that the country's done. They say that the stock market's gonna crash. They say that every single one of us is gonna lay down while they walk across our back. But I'ma stand up, gonna put my fists in the air. No, I don't wanna have to bring my guns, but I'll be ready if it goes there. But belongs there, so let's stand her up and brother.
sharp dirt and dust. A Lady Liberty needs our help from every single one of us.
And welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. I'm your host, James McCormick. And I'll tell you, folks, we got a show lined up for us tonight. Just to let you know, my voice is a little bit crackly. So I battled the flu last Friday. And now this is the hangover residuals of that. But you know what, though? You just keep on going. That's just what you have to do. Drink a lot of hot tea and lemon juice and a little bit of honey in it. And soldier on. That's what we do. A lot of things going on, folks. So I want to talk a little bit about, to kind of give you, open up the monologue. Obviously, we're going to talk about the war in Ukraine, and we're going to talk about some of the things that are going on there. But I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on here in America right now. So today, I get called by a good friend of mine, Mark Curtis. He's a newspaper reporter here. His daughter is serving in the Army Reserve, just a super, super wonderful guy. And he was asking my opinion about the VA cuts. And I said, you know, I haven't really even thought about the Veterans Administration cuts that are going on because we've all been distracted with the war in the Ukraine. You know, I mean, there's so much stuff going on, folks, unbelievable stuff that's going on in this country. But let me just go ahead and give you a little brief on this. Now, many years ago, a man named Abraham Lincoln, you know, he made a promise to care for those that have borne the battle and for his widow and his orphans. And obviously, we would have to insert hers as well, because we've got a lot of women that have been wounded and killed, and they have widows and widowers and orphans. And the VA, through Abraham Lincoln, they made this promise. It's been a promise that's been made for a very long time. Now there is this, the Air Commission that is going out and looking at facilities to shut down. Well, there's a lot of facilities on the chopping blocks, folks. Now they say they're outdated, older facilities, medical facilities. And I do know that there's some facilities in the VA that just are absolutely substandard. But what they're saying is, they, being the VA and this current administration, that we're going to cut these things, and then we're going to rebuild new ones, but we're not going to have near as many. So if you're living in West Virginia, you might have to go to Connecticut to get VA medical service for a certain condition, let's say spinal cord injury, traumatic brain injury. And most of the stuff that is really needed, because the brain injury is the signature injury of this current war. you know, it's remarkable to me that we're even talking about reducing. What we should be talking about is, I agree, there's some really crappy hospitals out there. Why are we not looking at increasing the funding for the VA and taking care of those warriors that have been sent to war and have been broken? I'm not talking about shammers and malingerers, folks. I know we've got a few of those. I was in the Army for 22 years. And I know that there are some people out there that, but I'm talking about people that have, no joke, been wounded in combat or injured in a training exercise, training for combat, that are now going to have to figure out, where am I going to get my treatment? Let me tell you a little bit about James McCormick's life ever since 2005, since I came home. And I told this to Mark Curtis, speak for everybody. But I can tell you that every day of my life, I wake up and I have to make a conscious decision to get out of bed and go and move, because I live with pain. And I don't give a crap what anybody says or thinks about me. But let me tell you something. Every damn day I get up, I have to pray. I have to make myself move. I have to stretch for 15 or 20 minutes because I have been gunshot in multiple spots in my body. Now, I choose to utilize the VA healthcare system when I can. I also have civilian healthcare, and I have insurance because I retired from the Army. I try to exercise, I try to run, I try to do everything. I've been shot through both my legs, folks, okay? I have arthritis in my shoulders, in my elbows, in my chest, in my knees, and I have got the worst pain some days that, you know, when I try to explain to people, they're like, oh, I just go to the hospital. I don't have the luxury to get up and go to the hospital every day, because on top of that, of being retired, I still have to work every day. And I'm tired of hearing about lazy people that don't want to get up and go get a job and go do something. I have to make myself, because I have a family to support. And now I look and I see that the little bit of health care that I do get, and I mean it's a little bit, is now going to be cut and reduced. So, yes, I'm speaking about me right now, okay? But I'm not the only one affected. I have got 49,000 members of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and every one of them wake up with that same pain every day. We talk about psychological pain. Yeah, it's there, too. It's there, too. And some days the psychological pain outweighs the physical pain. But I make myself go and get up and go do things because I have to, because we cannot lay down and die and quit. But we expect just a little bit of honoring the promise that was made for us. I've been sick for about a week with this thing, and I'm coming out of it. But do you realize that every day that I've had to deal with that, it seems like I have to deal with an additional headache after an additional headache after an additional headache caused by some bureaucrat, okay, that's either increasing my fees for my insurance or increasing the pain for me at the pump because I still have to get up and go to work. Why? Why is that? And I don't want to hear about it. It's Joe Biden. It's whoever. Let me tell you something. It's more than just Joe Biden. It's a bunch of placating, panty waist, socialist leaning jerks that are in Washington D.C. that are making life hard. Now, my fellow veterans that are out there, you need to get up off your ass and start participating in this a little bit more. Don't just sit around and think, well, I'm going to get my 100% disability check and I can just sit at the house. Baby. You need to get up and get engaged, because this country is going to fall. This country is going to fail if we don't engage. And I'm not talking about physical engagement, so don't go calling the FBI or saying anything stupid like that. Because that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you need to get involved. You need to write letters. You need to demand answers. You need to be voting. And I don't mean just going in and vote. You vote for people that you study and you know, okay? But I can tell you right now, there's a lot of things that are going on, and it's ridiculous. And I've never been talked to so disrespectfully in my life by a bunch of bureaucrats as I have in the last year and a half. And I'm in D.C. quite often. And representing the only veterans organization made up entirely of combat wounded veterans. You know that Purple Heart medal that everybody says, oh, I can't believe you bled for this country. Oh, thank you for your service. I don't want you to tell me thank you for my service. I want you to honor the promise that was made to care for those that born the battle, for their widows and their orphans. You do that, we don't have any problems. If you constantly try to nip and tuck and take away things that, you know, because you want to reduce spending, let me tell you, there's a lot of places you can reduce spending. This so-called Green New Deal that you guys are trying to push down our throat, you can reduce a lot of spending right there. Because you got a bunch of clowns, you got a circus, you got a group of overeducated, you know, extremely left-leaning socialists that are sitting out there, and they're going to tell us that we all need to make this immediate transition, all natural energy. I believe that it can be done, folks, but it cannot be done overnight. You don't have the infrastructure to do it. So instead of helping your veterans, let's shut down these hospitals, let's save money, and let's shift it over here on going green. That's what's going on. And I'm telling you, I can show you that, and all you have to do is open your eyes and see it. They're pushing these programs, you know, that are helping people, which I'm all about helping people. I'm all about a hand up, friend. That's what I'm about. I don't want to see kids starving. I don't want to see people treated bad because of their race, their religion, their sexuality, whatever. As a matter of fact, what you do in your bedroom, that's your business. That's between you, your partner, and God. I don't even want to hear about it. We don't need to parade it up and down the streets. I don't go around carrying around signs saying, you know, I'm a heterosexual male and I'm having sex with my wife tonight. Hey, y'all want to check it out? Nobody cares, okay? Nobody wants to hear that crap. What we want to hear is how you're going to take care of this country and those that have defended it. Every single one of the members that I have in the military or the Purple Heart lives with pain every day. And they're going to cut the few benefits that they have. And that's the reason why they didn't want us to testify in front of the VA Health Department, the Veterans Administration's medical committee. They didn't want us to testify because they knew I would tell them just this, and it would be on Fox News, CNN, everywhere else. Instead, you want to get a bunch of candy-ass panty waists that will go in and say what you want them to say. Apologize, you know, for my language. It's a little bit rough tonight. I know. And they want to give free health care to everyone. Everyone. I'm all about making sure somebody's taken care of, but don't you dare strip it from us that need it. I don't need your pills as much as I need the ability to go in and do the physical therapy that I have to do about once every 2 or 3 years to keep my body going, unless you just want us to lay down and die. Maybe that's the goal. You sure got a free one on my dad. He died when he was 52, ate up with Agent Orange cancer, died the most horrific, miserable death any of you will ever, ever see. It's terrible. It's terrible what's going on. And I'm so sorry that I'm so fired up over it right now. you know. But it's not just about me. I'm giving you a view of what I have to do. And then on top of that, I have to deal with what the jerks and the clowns and the local jerks around here do all the time. And they know when you're sick and you don't feel good. That's when they really, really needle down on you. But I'm going to get better soon. I'm getting better every day. I can promise you there's going to be a new day coming, all right? Because I won't be that just kind gentleman that says, oh, well, I will be nice and civil to a certain point. And then at that point, you know, you get to flip a switch. The stuff that's going on in the Ukraine is terrible. What's going on at our border is worse. Because now you're cutting VA benefits, veterans, but you're wanting to give health care, dental, to criminals and illegal immigrants that illegally cross into our country. I don't even get free dental, folks, from the VA. Let's just let that sink in. You think your veterans get their teeth taken care of? It's well-known fact that dental care is important for overall health care. And every veteran should be able to go in and get their teeth taken care of, okay? Unless they're 100% disabled or blah, 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 whatever. Do you really want us to be healthy? I don't think they do. I don't think that the bureaucrats in Washington really want us to be healthy. As a matter of fact, I think they want us all to die about the same age that my dad died, because it's like, don't have to pay that check no more. And we can shift that money over to the brand new Green New Deal, or give everybody a free cell phone, give everybody else free health care. And by the way, just stay home. The only time I need you to go out is whenever I tell you when to go vote, and we'll come pick you up. And you vote exactly like we tell you to vote. And there's groups that are doing it today. And they're voting in an agenda that they say is about peace, love, and harmony. But it's the furthest thing from the truth. It's not about peace, love, and harmony. It's about control and dictatorships. It's about taking over, stripping you of your rights. And it's not just Democrats doing it. So you better keep your eyes on both sides of that fence. So anyways, that's what's going on. In case you didn't know it. Did you know that I've got guys, and this is crazy right here, I have soldiers that fought in some of the worst battles of the Iraq War. Wonderful, wonderful soldiers. Bled for this country, got gunshot, killed the enemy at close range. Go to the VA healthcare system and get treatment for certain things like, like a bad cavity. They can't hardly get a job. They can't hardly get insurance. Can't get anything. But if they would go down to the liquor store and they would get arrested for being a thief or a drug dealer, and we locked them up. Now, prison is not an easy life. It's a horrible life, I'm sure. I don't know. I've never been to prison. I was an inmate, but I have been there in corrections, so I understand it's kind of rough. Do you realize when they get in there, you need your teeth fixed? We're going to fix your teeth. You need to get education. We're going to pay for that too. You need health care. We're going to take care of that. You're going to get fed. You don't have to worry about paying rent. You don't have to worry about paying for anything other than your debt to society and time. And some people do pretty good in prison. And then when they get out, it's even better than that. It's like, we're going to help you transition so you're not a repeat offender. And I believe in helping people. But I've got some of them that have been to jail 7, 8, 9 times. They come out, free phone, free counseling, medical card, dental card, food card. We'll help you get lodging. We're even going to help you get a job, man. They do more for ex-cons in some places than they do for the veterans of this country. I want you to let that sink in for a while. Been that way for a long time. It was going on during the last at least 5 administrations that I can remember. So everybody owns a little piece of that, right? Anyways, I'm not going to go on anymore because it just fires me up and I'm starting to lose my voice. And we got some really good stuff that we want to talk about. So we got Rich Kilblain and we got Father Michael Pacella. And again, you know, I'll apologize. My language was a little bit rough, but, you know, it upsets me. It really does. Let me tell you, there's a few things I don't like. I don't like lazy sloth. Can't stand it. Okay. And I'm not sloth and I'm not lazy. Okay. But I see a lot of people that are, wouldn't hit a lick at a snake if it was biting at them. And people just automatically just give them whatever. I don't like that. You know, I don't believe that the Bible condones that. As a matter of fact, I know there's passages that talks about people that don't work and they shouldn't eat. Okay, it's a shame because their families suffer. It really is. And I'm all for taking care of kids and orphans and, you know, single mothers that are trying to make it. I'm all for that. But what I'm not for is a perfectly healthy man, especially, and I'm pointing out the men in this country who lay around on their backside and they let moss grow on their rear end because they won't get up, won't cut their own grass, won't do nothing. But they'll complain about everybody else under the sun. Want something free given to them. You know? Anyways, I'm fed up with it. Father Michael, Rich Kilblain, yes. God bless you guys. Thanks for being on here tonight.
My pleasure.
You guys are going to have to take this show.
All right.
Yeah, Rich, you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening. You know, I was wondering, like, were you talking about me? You know, when you're talking about people who don't like to work and lay on their backside. I'm really enjoying it. I'm retired.
You know better than that. No, I'm talking about 20 and 30-some-year-old, you know, and I know one guy, 30-some years old. He's the biggest deadbeat that ever walked the face of this earth.
Yeah.
Been in jail 7 or 8 times, you know. Don't take care of none of his kids. Yeah. Terrible. Terrible.
You asked about a Bible verse, and there's several ways to interpret Jesus and the fig tree. You know, he came by it, and, you know, for 3 years it hadn't produced any fruit, and he condemned it. It died. One is the fig tree is a symbol of Jerusalem or Israel. The other one is it's lazy people who don't work. We're put on this earth to produce and multiply, and if you don't, you know, that you're not needed. And what are your thoughts on that, Father Michael?
No, you're correct. When it comes to the nation of Israel, because they weren't producing the fruit. And Jesus said there would be a nation that would produce the fruit thereof. But I also think barrenness is a real thing. When people are not productive and fruitful, after a while, there's a uselessness, and I think they dry up from not participating in creation. So I think that your application is a good one. The initial interpretation in the context is the children of Israel, but I think that it's could be applied in the manner in which you did. I wanted to mention, because Rich mentioned about the VA closing in certain areas, and I just found out this week that where I'm registered is closing. And, you know, if you're registered and you try to get into another VA and you're not registered there, you really just can't go and say, I'm a veteran, here's my card, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, there's a real concern. And I think that James really brought a lot of awareness. You know, I've had students, you know, talking about, you know, how bad it is in some prisons. And, of course, I've been visiting overseas as well. And there's just a lot of inconsistencies with the values of our nation. And, yes, I was told that Hampton is supposed to be closing. That's where I belong, and here in Virginia. So, yeah, I don't know what the outcome's going to be, but that's disconcerting. My father, too.
Well, that's mine.
Hospital.
I'm registered there, too.
Yeah. My father passed away at 54 in a veterans hospital, 100% disabled vet. And so I just hear, I feel you, James. I really appreciate what you shared this evening.
You know, that's really sad. Hold it. You're talking about Hampton Roads, VA, in the Tidewater area, has the largest concentration of military bases of any state in the nation, which means we have probably the largest number of retired veterans in anywhere in the nation. And they're closing our VA? That makes a lot of sense.
And just what James said, they're supposedly going to open another one. But, you know, that's nice to say. And, you know, it's concerning because myself, that's really, I mean, I'm old enough, you know, to be on Medicare. But really, the VA is my health care. That's it. So, you know, that's it. And, you know, they've allowed me to go on the economy under President Trump. I was able to do that when I came down with the diabetes, and they claim, you know, because I was exposed to Asian Orange off the coast of Vietnam. So, I mean, that's my health care, and I don't have any other insurance. And so, yeah, I'm really concerned. And the way James framed it, you know, and I've done a lot of prison ministry in my 45 years of ministry. And just the way he framed it, as far as all the things that we want to do to rehabilitate, but then we kind of kick to the curb. And if you've been into some really bad VA hospitals, the care, and I know people are trying and there's good people everywhere, they're really inferior to other facilities. We don't get the best of care. It used to be, you know, Walter Reed, this is the best of care, you're going to get the best of care. I don't always feel like I'm getting the best of care. I'm just being honest. I was recently given another doctor, and I don't necessarily feel that I'm getting treated like a person should be treated all across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely, and you know, and I said this one time when I was talking to some congressmen not too long ago. I said until the VA provides the same level of health care that you would get at the Cleveland Clinic or the Mayo Clinic or some of the best hospitals in the world, you are falling short of truly honoring that service and that commitment. And that's a fact. Until they get to that point, they are failing to keep their promise, in my opinion.
And they're not drawing the best doctors necessarily, you know, and I had to go get evaluated. And it was a very interesting situation. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, the VA hires and stuff like that. But it was supposed to be a very thorough, you know, examination. And the person was late and they had been to the gym. They weren't dressed. And, you know, it was just routine, and I just felt like I was mishandled and didn't feel like I was getting the best of care. And like you said, you don't, you feel like you did something. I have 10 years. You have 20 years. But I have 10 years in. So I get 10 years of my life. And you expect to get something in return of some level of quality, just like the quality that you gave to the military, especially being deployed or being in a war zone. You know, so I agree with you 100%. And I just think we need to raise up this this cry, because especially in our area, as Rich said, you know, it's so difficult to get in because there's so many veterans in the area traveling farther and farther out. It's going to be a hardship for a lot of people.
Well, we've submitted, you know, I submitted a letter, you know, obviously with our opposition, you know, to these recommended closures. And you know, I feel like a lot of times that just falls on deaf ears. And and I'm going to tell you, there are some politicians, you know, I met with three or four of them and a couple weeks ago that were really, really, they wanted to hear what was going on now. But for the most part, they don't. What they want to do is they're very they're very selective now. You know, you don't have the hearings in D.C. like you used to have. You used to have people that would really put out the facts. Now what they look for are people that will placate them, people that will tell them what they need. But let me groom you before you go in to speak to these congressmen and these senators. You know, you don't see anybody up standing, you know, up and saying, you know, we need this now, unless it's staged. Unless it's staged. And that's a sad thing to say, but it's the reality of it. And if you're viewed as someone that will do that, you're not going to get in front of that hearing, especially where there's going to be cameras or, you know, things that is going to draw attention, because, you know, they don't want that. And when I say they, I'm talking about a lot of politicians. They don't want that. They're more interested in keeping in their jobs than they are in doing their jobs. That's just the reality.
That's absolutely right. I've been trying to get my son to at least get evaluated. You know, I mean, he was a lot of combat. Now, his job provides such good health insurance for he and his family that he doesn't have to. But there are a lot of people like myself that have to, my dad. And you just don't feel like you're getting the quality of care. And, you know, and that's why when we've talked about, you know, health care for everyone, I get that. I grew up poor in the projects in Newark, New Jersey. You know, those who get to go to the doctors and get take care of themselves, you know, live longer, live better. Dentist, we had, you know, you put a paid a nickel. They had a dentist come right into the projects and this little clinic and stuff like that. But it really is something where, you know, there's so much about thank you for your service, thank for your service, but it's cheap when it's just talk. So if that's real, and I appreciate, you know, being able to buy a house. But like I said, I have 10 years of service. So I don't think that's asking too much to be able to, you know, warrant a down payment to buy a house when I've given that much service. And, you know, when I first went in, I shared with you all, I made $245 a month, you know, and all you can eat. You know, so I mean, it wasn't, you know, for the money, but, you know, we had a sense of, we called it the service. And I don't think that they have the same mindset. And there are some doctors and PAs that I've had that have had military service and that they try to relate to you. But for the most part, my particular PA has 1,400 patients. And now I've been given to somebody else. And I don't know. It's a real concern you're raising. And I think that We have to raise the consciousness of our country, because they're so quick to put us out there and to risk our lives, but then kind of kick you, you know, and throw you under the bus afterwards. I tell you, when I had this situation, they dropped the ball. And when I mentioned it, they dropped the ball. I had to finally get someone in the community to get me a doctor. I should have been on medication with the diabetes. And they were going to set up this, set up that, and they never did it. And, you know, I went to the emergency room there. And I don't think that's only my experience. And I really think that, you know, the country has a moral obligation to veterans.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, Abraham Lincoln said it. I mean, he really did. He, you know, when he made his, you know, speech, with malice towards none and charity for all, with the firmness and the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which we may achieve, and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. You know, Abraham Lincoln was talking more than just about taking care of the veterans, but that was a very important statement that he made. And, you know, the VA, on every VA medical facility, they had taken out, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan. And it's everywhere. You go in there, they're like, yes, that's who we are.
Hey, James, wait a minute. See, you're just talking about words, platitudes. I think all politicians will agree with that, okay? And they'll say the same thing. What we're talking about is what they actually do, not what they say, but what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're going
to
find one congressman who is going to say that we shouldn't take care of our vets. But
no, they don't have to say
it. Well, that's the whole point. It's not about
they don't have to say it. They're doing it.
Yeah.
They're showing us that they're not doing it.
Yeah.
They're showing in the and what this is, it's the VA Mission Act, which basically requires the VA secretary to publish an air report, you know, in the Federal Register. And then the Air Commission will conduct public hearings. You know, and these public hearings are a freaking joke. They are. Now, some people they bring in there, I know, have suffered. They're miserable. I get it. But I'm telling you, if you're going to go in there and really lay it on the line, they will not invite you to speak. That's the reason why they did not invite the Military Order of the Purple Heart, or the Congressional Medal of Honor Society, or the people that will stand up and say, you know what, we're going to tell you exactly how it is. You want to know why? Because that's who we are. Instead, they will call in the political line groups, okay? And I'm just telling it like it is, and they'll get mad at me for saying that. But they have lots of money. They have lots of lobbyists. And you know what? It's like, we'll say exactly what you want us to say, but let us at least get a little rough. And it's a game that they play, and it's a terrible game, because they're not helping us by doing that. Go ahead, Father Michael.
James,
sorry.
The last time I went to the VA, a couple times ago, I waited for hours and hours. And because I was in my clerics as a priest, all of the other veterans kept coming up to me, and they knew I was a chaplain. He said, "Chaplain, they don't even tell us, you know, how long we have to wait, or they don't inform us, you know, that, you know, they got our name." And they were just, you know, really, and it was crowded, a waiting room. And so I wrote up a complaint. You know, I felt like they came to me because they didn't have an advocate. And it's like, you know, we're here for hours and hours and hours. Nobody informs us. No one tells us anything. And it's a shame. If I took a former retired sergeant major, retired, and I took him with me one day, he was astonished. He could not believe what he was seeing, because I guess as a retiree, he had TRICARE or whatever else that we came up with, and he'd never had to go to the VA. And I took him there in Hampton, and he was appalled. And like I said, he's a retired sergeant major, military police. And he just couldn't believe it. And he weighed it, too, with me. And I had another guy that was had been a captain in the police department, and then he was a chief of police. And he was with me for hours and hours. And what one of the things they told us is the police for the VA system was down, I don't know how many, 30 officers or whatever. We were talking to some of the officers, you know, trying to find parking. But the PA that waited on me, I felt like he needed to talk to me. And he said that somebody had threatened his life. And this guy had a, you know, quite an interesting background. He even spent some time at Fort Bragg and stuff like that. But I'm just telling you, it's a terrible situation. If you've ever had to stay in a big place like that for hours and hours and hours, I just felt bad. And they, like I said, they were complaining to me. Like, chaplain, you know, tell it to the chaplain, as Rich would say. But, you know, let's do something here. And somebody's got to be an advocate.
Yeah, and I agree.
It's bureaucratic. Yeah.
It is. It's very bureaucratic. And I know it's a shame. And look, and elections have consequences. But, you know, some of this stuff, you know, this has been going on for a long time. So it's like, you know, I mean, you know, one political party, if the Democrats or if the Republicans were in control, the Democrats would blame the Republicans, you know, vice versa. And here's the deal. They all own this mess. And mm-hmm. you know, some of them get it, especially those that are elected that are also veterans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, congressman, senator, you don't have to use the VA healthcare system. You got
right.
You got premier health care. You will always mm-hmm. have premier health care for you and your family. You know what I mean? But the Joe on the street, the guys like I'm talking about, the people, I mean, literally, man, it's so sad. Guys that absolutely put their life on the line and mm-hmm. they can't afford, that. You know, they get a plumbing issue in their house. And it's financially devastating for them.
Right.
You know, $1,000, $2,000 repair destroys them. And they walk around with glasses sometimes that they haven't had a chance, or they the VA does provide them with glasses now, which is good, but they have to wait so long. Or they go to the dentist and they can't get dental work because they don't have insurance. You know,
mm-hmm.
and it's like their teeth are horrible. It's because of whatever reason. A lot of them grind their teeth at night. You know what I mean? Because they have these horrific
yes.
dreams, and they grind their teeth at night, and they've ground them down, and then they go to the dentist, and, you know, that's a $3,000 adventure. You know, it's like
sure.
if they're having a hard time with a $2,000 plumbing bill, and they're raising a couple of kids, you know, and they're working full-time on top of that. You know, I mean, you know, for me, I think it's a tragedy that we don't do more for our veterans, and we don't, you know, all these organizations out here, you know, free houses, free cars that do a great thing. I appreciate that, but you know, you need a dental organization. I'm just telling you,
mm-hmm.
and I say
mm-hmm.
this because I had to deal with a couple of veterans here recently. You know, it's like we have to go past the hat. You know what I mean? To get enough money.
Same with my dental work. My sister, God bless her, and my bishop said, you know, thank her because she cared about the mouth of someone who preaches the gospel. But if it wasn't for my family, I had to go on the economy and pay for all my dental work. Now, when I was in, of course, they did some work. No, but you're absolutely right. And that has a lot to do with the rest of your health, your oral
absolutely.
Care. And, you know, we have to wait so long for an appointment, and there's just so many discouraging things. I'm sure you both remember when you had something broken when you were in the military in a move, going through the bureaucracy to get that replaced. To me,
uh-huh.
many times, just discouraged, forget about it. Just forget about it. I'll counter for you. You make it so difficult for me, and I feel it's the same with the healthcare. You make it so difficult for me that, you know, why bother? You know, spending all of that time. And like I said, that when they complained to me, they said, Chaplain, they don't even come out and say, you know, we've been here hours, you know, give you an update. What's going on? What's the situation? I mean, does it take that much professionalism to be courteous to those who have served? It really doesn't.
Well, no, I mean, a lot of times it's opposite. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you run into rude people. You know, I've run into some very bad employees at the VA, very bad ones. And you tell them, you know, they're like, well, they'll call the cops on you, and the cops will remove you. They could sit there and belittle you and say, you're going to shut up and do what I tell you. Cops remove you, and you won't get another appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's like they strip the pride. And there's no customer service. It's not all of them, but there are quite a few of them that are like that.
No, it's dead. You know, I put some pictures on Facebook, as you know, of myself and my wife and whatever, because when you get older, people look at you as useless, as you don't really contribute anything. You're not, you know, great looking and muscular and athletic anymore. And they don't know. And, of course, you see all these veterans with their hats, you know, for wherever they served or whatever like that. But you said the word, James, dignity, treating people with dignity. That means so much. And you just have to have the right people. So I tell you, recently shared with the nurse, you know, that they dropped the ball. And next thing I know, I got a complaint from the PA. He said, well, you talked to my nurse, and they were offended. I'm just telling you the truth. I was treated. I talked to a physician friend of mine. He said, you should be on medication. I waited for weeks and weeks and weeks and going into months. And I called the Hampton or the Richmond one, and you have to put in your social security number, and if you're not in the system, you're not in the system. But one time I got somebody from South Carolina. It was like on a weekend. And so I just called Hampton. Well, we're connected here and this and that, and I'll talk to that person. I'll back brief them. Never happened. It's just too big and bureaucratic. It's not, you know, and we suffer because we've learned how to suck it up. Hurry up and wait. I mean, that's a common thing that we all, you know, experienced.
Well, let's we're well into the show here. We wanted to talk a little bit about the situation in Ukraine. I'd like to start with you or Rich, either one. Let's kick this thing off, man. What's going on over there? I mean, we were obviously watching the same, you know, the missile attack on the civilian train station. You know, for the children written on the side of that missile. I mean, that's just horrendous. What's your thoughts on all that?
Well, actually, that could have been, there's a whole lot. I mean, you can't prove it was intentional, but it probably was. But the sight of bodies with their hands tied at execution style, that's clearly a war crime. And I just heard that the Germans had intercepted radio traffic where the Russians were talking about war crimes. Okay, so it is happening. It is happening. You know, I try to be as objective as I can for anybody who's listened to the show, but the evidence is stacking up. The Russians are committing war crimes. But the question is why? Is it now? One thing a pattern we're seeing here is the Russian army is an undisciplined army. Otherwise, it would have performed much better. But there is also a command culture, and we know that. All right, and so we don't know if this is directed from the top, or it's just the Russian soldiers are so bitter about, you know, their situation that they're executing. Keep in mind, you know, they're getting hit hard by the Ukrainians. So they may be, you know, it's the Russian culture to torture and execute people. I mean, why do you think Putin's in power? But all right, so that's happening. But there's also this possibility that do not underestimate Putin. Don't think he's crazy. He's been well misinformed. Well, that's one thing for certain. Is no one wants to give him bad news, so they've given him the most optimistic news, and he's pretty much disappointed by what his army has done. But a lot of what he does is to provoke the West into a response so that he can justify escalating things. You know, he had the forces surrounding Ukraine. Everything he was doing was trying to prompt a response from the West. Fortunately, we responded with sanctions. Now we have the war crimes. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a green light from higher up. At least they're not trying to prevent it. But it may be the culture of the Russian army, just like the Japanese army in World War II. That was a culture of brutality, all right? The generals, I don't think the Japanese generals ordered, you know, the American soldiers to be killed. That was just kind of like their culture. But for one thing is they're getting beaten. The Russians are getting beaten. And I look at this more from a tactical and operational viewpoint, and I mean, we're looking at a small outnumbered army defeating one of the biggest and most advanced armies in the world, and they're doing it with drones, small drones. I mean, James, you think about it. You know, the drones you have, and these things can take out tanks. I really think that the tank is about to become as obsolete as the cavalryman did during World War One. You okay?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, being, well, at least the Soviet tanks or the Russian tanks, yeah, for sure, because they've never been much good anyways.
They get any tank, got a drone, you know, just the kind of drone everybody can buy and fly around. And you put a little bomb, a Molotov cocktail, and you just fly it to the engine compartment, it will shut down the tank. I don't know if for people who aren't familiar with, you don't throw the Molotov cocktail on the armor and all that. You throw it on the engine compartment. It's ventilated. It will melt the wires. It will shut the tank down. That's where you're supposed to hit the tank with it.
Yeah, they're definitely doing a bang-up job, that's for sure.
Yeah.
My concern is that it's like the Alamo. You know, they're holding out, and unless there's some other action from other NATO countries, anything more than that, I don't think he'll stop at anything, and I just think that they'll become demoralized and decimated after a while. I mean, how many new soldiers were conscripted from Russia?
Yeah. Right now, the Russian army is in retreat, except in the eastern area. And I think the Ukrainians have gained ground in the east, too. But they have abandoned taking Kiev, the capital. Now, if we look through history, what could happen is, well, let's look at the British Army in 1775. You know, they were good, but they got themselves in a bad situation in Boston, and the Americans managed to get their hands on British artillery and put it on the high ground, and the British had to evacuate Boston. What'd they do? Regrouped, picked up reinforcements, and came back in 76.
Mm-hmm.
And drove Washington out of New York and drove him all the way across the Delaware into Pennsylvania. I wouldn't be. The problem is we are seeing that the Russian troops, the Russian soldier, one, is undisciplined, lacks motivation. I mean, he's got all the reasons why he shouldn't be fighting. And I think it'd be hard to fix that. The British Army, at least in 75, was a disciplined army. They just did a bad situation.
Right.
But, no, I don't see it as an Alamo because the majority of Ukraine is not occupied. It's not a small holdout completely surrounded. I see it as and the Ukrainians are going on the offensive. I think they had some really good generalship. They did not, I think, especially in the Kiev area, you know, they didn't try to stop the Russians. They drew them in, had them extend their supply lines, and then they went after the supply lines. They got them caught in columns. They attacked the worst time of the year during the winter. Their ground was soggy, so they had to stay on the roads, tied them up in the cities, and just went after them, okay? Now, I could see the Russians falling back, generals getting fired, learning what mistakes they made, and then coming back stronger later. That's a possibility. But right now, they're getting their butts handed to them.
What you said about undisciplined, you know, my son made a comment, you know, who fought in Afghanistan. He said, if there was such a great army, then Afghanistan would be Russia today. So obviously there are some deficiencies, and we've made it sound like, you know, the Cold War, you know. And, of course, the difference, of course, is the nuclear warheads and, you know, things of that nature. And I don't think that we have a lot of stability. I've even seen some stuff in the religious world on the Russian side, you know, trying to justify, you know, worldliness or whatever it might be. And I just don't think we're dealing with a sane person or a sound person. Now, I like what you said. I think he knows what he's doing, but I don't think that there's any rationale to it. You know, it's total war, and that's why the civilians have had to take up arms, because obviously their army is not adequate to fight against such a large army. But after a while, if there's not an intervention, I fear that the Ukrainians aren't going to be able to hold on.
Clausewitz said that you know, to defeat the enemy, you gotta you gotta hit their center of gravity, and that is their will to resist.
Right.
How long this war can last and who wins depends on who's willing to fight the longest for it. Okay. The Ukrainians, I think they're pissed. All right. Remember, they produced one of the greatest armies in history, the Cossacks. They're great fighters. You've got, you know, you're talking about men who've taken their families across the border into Poland and then returned to fight.
Right.
I think they have the will to resist. And then, you know, they're seeing victory. That just galvanizes them to resist even more. The Russian soldier, I don't think his heart is into it. He's undisciplined. He's drafted for 2 years, and that's it. They're in
deals. But, Rich, even if it was over tomorrow, do you think that it would take less than 20 years to rebuild the country? I mean, the devastation of the infrastructure. I heard an interview with Bret Baier and Zelensky, part of it anyway. And I guess there was some unrest in some of his leadership. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, some different things or what's going on and even assassination attempts on his life. And certainly, you know, they have a stiff upper. I mean, they're really standing tall. But the country's so devastated. You know, if Russia loses, are they responsible, you know, to pay to rebuild like we have done?
You have to defeat Russia to make them pay. You have to beat a country in order when I say beat them on their own ground, occupy them
right.
in order to get them to pay for anything. No, Ukraine's fighting a defensive battle, all right? Mm-hmm. The best they can hope for is driving the Russians out and making
yeah.
them pay a high enough price that they're going to abandon the eastern area. But I don't see as much devastation. Towns have been devastated, yes. I'm telling you, you should look at some images of French towns during World War One and they all recovered, right? So they can recover.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at this from a as objectively as I can, and I'll tell you right now, we're going to be studying this war, right? I think the tank is about to become obsolete, and except for rare occasions, the Ukrainians have the will to resist, and as long as we can supply them with the tools they need to kill Russian tanks and Russian soldiers, I believe they will fight and they will win. But we are going to be studying this. I mean, when we talked about Russian paratroopers landing on that airfield and getting beaten, man, I'm interested in that story right there, because we don't have a whole lot of examples of airborne operations. I mean, if you look at it, most of our airborne operations since World War II have been on cold drop zones, okay? The airborne drop into Korea was secure. The airborne drop into Vietnam was a secure drop zone. And if I understand, I don't know a lot of details about the airborne, the 173rd jumping into the northern part of Iraq, whether that was a hot drop zone, hot DZ. Now, I do know the Ranger jump into Rio Auto in Panama was a hot drop zone. And the thing about the brigade of the 82nd that jumped into Panama missed their drop zone and landed in the swamp. Ooh. They were like a mile or two off from their drop zone, and that cost them. In fact, most of their casualties came when they don't tell you about it, but the Rangers had already there was two airfields. There was the military airfield, and then there was an international runway. The Rangers jumped into the military airfield, took out the airborne company, and since the 82nd hadn't jumped in, they went ahead and took the international airport. So when the 82nd started coming out of the swamp and approached their objective, they got in a firefight with the Rangers. And they lost, I think, 15 casualties that day.
Wow.
And the only other attack they had was Tanahitas, which was unoccupied, but they did get mortared. I believe those 15 casualties were in a shootout with the Rangers, and they lost. But anyway, I am very interested in the study of airborne operations and how that one went wrong. Okay. I think our army is going to be studying this one to develop our future tactics. I think we're going to completely revamp our army based on how well the Ukrainians have performed and how poorly the Russians have.
Ukrainians can hold out even though they're receiving supplies without the intervention
Let me see. Do you think the Americans could have held out against a far superior British army in 1775? Yeah, I think we fought all the way up until
1783.
That's what it is. I think
the will in your own country.
You know, I don't know the Ukrainians, but, look. First of all, look at the map and look at how much ground the Russians have at the maximum control. They only control a fraction of the country. They're bombing. Yeah, sure, they're throwing, you know, missiles and things at towns throughout Russia, Ukraine, but the majority of Ukraine is not occupied by the Russians. It's the border areas, and they're being driven back. And the only success they're having is in the east, and that's because a lot of that area is pro-Russian to begin with.
Yeah.
Right?
But so many people have
the Russian generals are very disappointing, especially they don't know logistics. They definitely don't know logistics. And the Ukrainian generals seem to be – look, that's a country that probably picked its best people and used meritocracy rather than politicizing its military and promoted people that could actually get the job done and defend their country. Because
you don't
it's
think
showing.
We're training or have trained some of those leaders?
Yes, I do know we did. I do know we sent advisors over there because my boss, Dave Kalita, gave up his job. There was a call for contractors to go over and train the Ukrainian army, and my boss gave up his job to go there and train up the Ukrainians. Okay? I should ask him. I should try to go to Fort Lee and look him up and ask him, like, hey, what do you know about this? But, yes, we did send advisors over there, their military. But I will tell
because
you, what they're doing doesn't reflect anything from our doctrine. I think
okay.
they were
that's
really
a, that's
smart.
That's a good insight, Rich. Yeah. That's a really good insight. That's what I'm trying to get at. And if it doesn't reflect our doctrine, then it's interesting in how they're carrying this out, even though it's predominantly defensive. It seems like there is a rhyme or reason, unlike what we can discern or extrapolate from the Russians. Would you agree?
I think there's, yeah, yeah. I think, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and I think their generalship was wise enough to see what the I don't think they knew how bad the Russians were at logistics, but I think their plan was to stretch, let them invade, stretch out their supply lines, and then hit their supply lines. And the fact that to the Russian army is logistics, and you hit that, you know, you've got there's photographic evidence of tanks, functional tanks, abandoned on the road, which means they ran out of gas. Okay,
so,
let alone
Rich, when they were in Afghanistan all those years, they invaded Afghanistan. What made them decide to give up on it? What was the Achilles heel?
Same reason we pulled out of Vietnam. The same reason Biden and Trump pulled us out of Afghanistan. The war went too long. Again, it's now keep in mind, we didn't have, as far as the rest of them, look, far as Afghanistan goes, the Americans had already forgotten about it. We only had a brigade there. We had enough people volunteering to go into the army to go to Afghanistan. My nephew was slated to go to Afghanistan, and his deployment got cut, and that, you know, that hurt his feelings. He wanted to go. The average American isn't serving, all right? Less than 1% of the American population serves.
Right.
Now it's down to less than 25% even qualify for service.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, we could have kept troops in Afghanistan for another decade. No one would care. They weren't being engaged. Rarely you get to hear anybody getting killed. But, you know, we got politicians, and that's what happened with Russia. They lost. Now, in their case, they were they were being engaged. They were the Taliban was hitting them, and so they the Russians finally lost their will to, you know, fight and pulled out. And they made some big mistakes. That they the Russian military is not that smart. All right, I mean, I could go into, if you wanted to know, I could talk about a lot of the mistakes that the Russians made in Afghanistan, but a lot of mistakes.
Well, I think it would be informative, Rich. I think it would be informative because we're trying to understand, as you said earlier, their doctrine. And either they don't know how to execute or they don't know what their doctrine is and it's not consistent. So I think that study, like you were saying about us studying certain things, even with the armored trucks, with the Vietnam situation for Afghanistan and Iraq, I think it would be informative for us to understand what they learned. What was their after-action report?
When I was in Germany, the Russian army, as far as I know, it hasn't changed. It's still drafty army. Was very disciplined, and they had not changed their doctrine since World War II, and so they were going to attack in waves with their weakest armor up front and their best armor in the rear. Basically, what they wanted to do is to send their crap up against us to expend our ammunition, waste, and break up our formations and stuff, so that when their best weapon systems, their best tanks got to the front, we've already been depleted, and so they'll have the best success. They used a system like that in when Saddam Hussein was defending Kuwait. It's called the mother of all tank battles, was the Battle of Kursk. And in the Battle of Kursk, the Russians put their weakest forces up front. They used penal battalions. They had penal battalions up front, and they progressively got, fell back to their strongest forces in the rear. Okay, and the idea was that when the Germans punched through, they would get attrited. So by the time they reached the rear, they were weaker, and they were going up the strongest force that Germans had. What they didn't understand was the Germans had a very good tank recovery and rebuild system. So they were putting those Tigers back into service. Now the Saddam Hussein's campaign plan for the defense of Iraq, James, that was his first war, was based on Kurds, and it was the weak forces up front, the reserves, all those guys that were conscripts that were called up, and his Republican Guard, which is his best, was in the rear. But Schwarzkopf, he studied the Rommel's North African campaign, and he was in particularly intrigued by the Bir Hakam, going to Tobruk, going around this minefield around Bir Hakam, and so that's why he does his end run. He goes around all those anti-tank ditches and stuff and hits them from the flank. Now, and it worked. But the Afghan war, what the problem the Russians made was that they kept increasing their footprint. That required more ground convoys. Enemies started going, the Mujahideen, which became the Taliban, went after the convoys, which required the Russians to set up more outposts to defend the routes, which required more convoys, and this problem just compounded itself. Okay, by going in with more troops, it just made them more vulnerable, and they didn't ever think of using gun trucks to defend convoys. They used tanks, and then unfortunately, their tank could not, its main gun couldn't elevate high enough to take out the enemy in the high ground. Okay, so that's the main thing. But the Russians learned from that experience, and they changed their doctrine, where the military liaison we had with the Russian army came back. I got briefed by those guys, or one of those guys, and he told us, we couldn't believe that the Russians would attack in waves and follow their doctrine, because we didn't. We never, you know, we didn't read our manuals. We didn't follow our doctrine. We just made this stuff up. And so we're studying the Russian doctrine, and we're really concerned, like, no, how are they really going to fight? The guy comes back and says, no, they are religious about following their doctrine. Mm-hmm, in fact, mm-hmm. he watched their war games. He said, if a tank so much as break down, the whole line stops because they're concerned about their formations. He said, you knock out a single tank, that whole formation will come to a halt. He said it'll probably take them a couple weeks before they finally abandon that idea. It, our first week, our first couple weeks in the, you know, when the war, World War III breaks out, we're probably going to do a lot of damage to the Russian army, okay? Because we were afraid that we'd hit tanks and they just keep pouring through us like they we
right.
do in the National Training Center. No, they come to a halt. But after the Afghan War, the Germans, I mean, I keep saying the Germans, the Russians, and they shifted, they became more like us. And they began to shift more emphasis to small units. So in other words, they're not worried, concerned about big formations, but they're giving a lot more flexibility to the lower commanders. And I understand that's one thing the Chinese have done. They have learned a lot by studying us. They have been very impressed with you know, how much latitude a platoon leader or company commander has in the American Army. And so they borrowed from us and trained their men the same way. So I think what you're seeing is a lot of, you know, these battalion and brigade commanders are operating independently. You know, they're told to go down the road. But they, you know, it's not a case of them following orders as much as they're giving, you know, what we'd call mission-oriented orders, and they figure out how to execute it. But it turns out their biggest problem is, huh?
I don't know as much about tanks as my son, but I was impressed by the agility. You know, what you're saying about powering down is a very interesting concept. My son sent a question. I want to read it to you. Will we occupy Ukraine after this war the same as we occupied Japan today to provide a ready and lethal capability that deters adversary aggression?
Not this year, okay? Mm-hmm. If the war was to end this year, the thing is, as I've said over and over again, Putin has stated, I think he wrote a paper in 93 or 94, and he, you know, it outlined his vision, and he does not want Ukraine part of NATO, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
We want to avoid aggravating. I don't think we should go into Ukraine, and I don't think we will. Definitely Biden. I don't think Biden. Let me tell you, for the next 2 years, as long as Biden's a president, I think his handlers are smart enough to keep us out of Ukraine. All right. And now, I will tell you this: Finland joined the EU, but didn't join NATO. And I think it was like 85% of Finland was not in favor of joining NATO. But after watching what happened in Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
they have shifted their stance and they now want to be members of NATO. Okay, and because the solution for Ukraine is Finland, is, you know, Finlandization, which means, you know, you can be neutral, but you can look to the West, and the thing is, I listened to, you know, a former, you know, president or prime minister of Finland. He was talking about it. He said, well, we didn't like Finlandization when we lived under it, because basically Russia, you know, they were independent in running their own lives, but their own country, but they they couldn't do, they couldn't turn to the West like they wanted to. But now that they've seen what happened to Ukraine, now this war goes on longer and Ukraine starts really seriously kicking Russia's butt, we may go, this is an ally we want to keep, okay? So for right now, if this war was to come to an end, no, we would not go in and occupy.
But if this war
goes on longer and they seriously degrade Russia's capability, then we could, okay? But I don't see the United States, definitely Biden. All right, Biden is not going to go in there.
Somebody in NATO, let's just say, they not only want to help the Ukraine, but there's some sense of you don't attack Russia, then, you know, there's not going to be a kind of diversion of the army. In other words, if you were going to, as a unit, parts of Russia, then doesn't some of their army have to leave Ukraine and come defend their homeland? I mean, do they have that much reserve?
Wait, who are you talking about that, attacking Russia? Who's attacking Russia? NATO
or Ukraine?
That,
yeah, NATO.
I can't foresee any situation where mm-hmm. NATO would attack Russia mm-hmm. if we weren't attacked first. I believe that's what Putin wants. I
mm-hmm.
think Putin is trying to provoke NATO
yeah.
into taking some kind of military response other than supplying Ukraine, because
mm-hmm.
that would give Putin the justification to use chemicals and nukes.
Yeah, I agree with
right?
that.
He's been talking
yeah.
about that, so
mm-hmm.
I can envision – anyone, any NATO country, and especially remember, the country that contributes to the most in NATO is the United States.
Right.
And but I will tell you this: I have been really. I will tell you one of the miscalculations that Putin made. Or his advisors, his military advisors made, was that Europe wouldn't respond. And I expected that too. I expected,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I was so disappointed with Germany in the last
yeah.
time that Russia invaded, you know, Ukraine, annexed Crimea. And I'm like, screw NATO. I mean, if Europe doesn't care, why should we care? I was surprised at Europe's response this time. I think Putin was surprised by Europe's response. He didn't expect this. He underestimated the European response. Now, from everything
well,
I'm hearing,
Rich, how long
Europe,
we
well, I want to take this,
though.
From everything
okay,
I'm hearing,
mm-hmm.
they didn't respond this in unification because of Biden. In
mm-hmm.
fact, what I'm hearing from Europe is they are getting to the point they don't think they can count on the United States anymore after
mm.
the pullout from what they saw happen in Afghanistan. This
yeah.
is your,
mm-hmm.
even though Biden has gone over there and talked and stuff like that, it is Europe standing up for Europe.
Yeah. But how long do we stand by? And I'm saying we, the rest of the world. You know, when you think back at Hitler and his aggression, like how long – does the world just stand by? What are they waiting for? And I understand the sanctions. I understand the weapons. But when does it come a time where you have to unite together against the bully? Like
yeah.
when does that decision? Mm-hmm.
That's a very good question. And I ask the same thing. It's not a matter of when. It's based on
mm-hmm.
what. Okay,
mm-hmm.
it is what are we, how far are we willing to allow Russia to go in its atrocities
right.
before we intervene?
That's right.
So it's not a matter of when, it's based
mm-hmm.
on what. How much are
yeah.
we willing to to sit back and watch. What is that red line in the sand that we have not articulated? You know, Biden has got up there and said, you can't use chemicals, you can't use nukes. We will respond in kind, or no, we will respond in measure. But he's vague about it, okay?
Proportionality is called in just war.
Well, and look, I mean, when you see Biden looks like a feeble old man, that's the scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
We are on the verge of World War III. And oh, I had just I debate with a retired Transportation Corps colonel, Vietnam vet, brilliant man. We have some wonderful, wonderful debates. He hates Trump. He has personal reasons to hate Trump. He did a business deal with Trump, and Trump screwed him. I'm like, had I got stuck with a $100,000 bill like that, I'd hate Trump too, okay? But the thing is, that we sit there and go back and forth like this, and I'd just written him because he supports Biden. And I'm like, Biden is not being Biden. His handlers are controlling him. And I said, he has a very delicate situation here because the wrong message couldn't provoke Putin into doing something. I believe that Putin's invasion of Ukraine was based on accepting Biden's challenge, right? And so I just wrote him that. And then the next thing we know, Biden is calling for regime change. Okay. I mean, everybody started backtracking that and saying, no, he didn't say that. I'm like, sure sounded like it. So I'm going like, you know, we're on the verge of World War III, and you watch this. He's not a Churchill. He's not even
absolutely
a Chamberlain.
Not.
He's a senile old man watching. He has trouble. Like, am I done? You may finish this, man. What do we do next? He's wander around trying to figure out, like, and somebody's like, well, hurt him this way. Get him off the stage. That's not the image we need to present when we're going
right
against Putin. But, hey, we are stuck with this guy, okay? So it is what it is.
But even the Joint Chiefs, chief and different people who are advising him. Now, I know not every president takes the advice
right
of the advisor, but it just seems to me that there's no plan. And if you keep waiting,
no, I think there is
stomach
a good plan
it anymore.
I think the thing is, if they can keep Biden on script, Biden doesn't know what he's doing, but he has no. Look, the guy has, according to Robert Gates, he's been wrong on foreign policy his whole political career.
Right.
So he can't afford to make a mistake. He has to listen to his – and his military – his Secretary of Defense is a first-class guy, okay? His Secretary of State is – I mean, you talk about the rest of his cabinet is their only qualifications is – being diverse, but for the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, men for that, okay, and for the most part, and I believe his National Security Advisor, Sullivan, is also highly qualified, and so I think he's listening to them. The problem is when he goes off script.
Yeah.
You know, all those gaffes he makes. You know, look, this guy is not allowed to take questions because everybody's worried about what he's going to say. So he gets up there. He's a puppet. Literally, this man's a puppet.
Now, you
I mean,
speak highly of
wrong.
The Secretary
prove
of Defense.
Prove me wrong. Prove me this guy has the intelligence and the tenacity to do this. He's a figurehead. He's got smart people working for him. Give him credit for that. They're telling him what to say. He is reading the prompter. Does
you have
not
a high regard for the Secretary of Defense. Why? Why? He wasn't a former classmate or anything. The Secretary of Defense, you've said on several occasions that you felt he was competent. He was a good choice. Can you tell us why we should have confidence
no,
in him?
No, because he's a former Marine general. That's enough for me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I don't know about Austin. I don't know his military background. You know, right. I know about Mattis. I've heard about Mattis. But
right,
the fact
right.
is
Mattis
that you pick a career soldier who spent his life studying war. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do in the military. We study war. We study how to win wars.
Yeah,
that guy's
Austin
a Secretary
was,
of Defense.
Was Army.
Yeah, Austin
he was Army.
Was, I thought
Army.
He was Marine.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
No,
well, that,
he was
that's
Army.
Even better. Okay. But I like Mattis. I really like Mattis. But no, the guy's a – he spent his career studying war. Blinken was a career diplomat. He spent his career studying diplomacy. That's enough for me. I don't know what their leanings are, but I mm-hmm. trust them because they are – they're you know, the rest of his cabinet have no, – I don't think they have any experience in what their job is. They were hired because
right.
of their diversity.
Yeah, there's – there are a lot of them are
Vice
bailing,
President,
I'll tell you.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
a lot of them are bailing.
Kind of executive competence, that's right. That's scary because, you know, you would think the executive competence that one needs, like a governor rather than a senator becoming president, at least you know that they have some executive experience. And with the budget and different things of like that, even the National Guard, this, that, and the other thing. But
well,
just,
let me point out, let's compare
reason.
Biden with Johnson, okay?
Okay, okay.
Johnson
good.
Had an agenda, too. Johnson
mm-hmm.
was going to wage a war on poverty, all right? It was. He already had another war that he really didn't get. I mean, Kennedy got us into it, but it was an advisor war. Johnson escalated it to a large ground
pilot that
yeah, but the thing is,
with him.
Say again?
In Vietnam.
What?
I knew
you talked with President
pilot.
Johnson.
Talked with President Johnson. He did, I forget how many different missions, and I actually got to talk with him here. He was from here. He's dead now. But he was a test pilot, and he shared a little bit about the way President Johnson dealt with things. I mean, it seemed like a little bit of a micromanager.
He was. He was, and he screwed up the war.
Yeah.
But let me – him and McNamara.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Had it not been for the Vietnam War, Johnson would have propped down as one of our great presidents. You know, You look
civil
at
rights.
The equal rights movement. You look at, mm-hmm. you know, his war on poverty. But the problem is he was waging a large-scale war in Vietnam. You can't do both. And Biden,
right.
Biden comes in with this peacetime agenda, and now we're on the verge of World War III, one of the greatest
mm-hmm.
calamities, you know, of his administration. You're sitting there watching like, okay, he screws up the border, then he really blows it with Afghanistan. Like, how bad can this guy get? Now we're on the verge of World War III, and
really?
He's walking on eggshells. His handlers are controlling him. He is now a puppet president. Prove me wrong. For anybody out there, prove me wrong. The guy does not have the faculties or the experience to handle this crisis, Green New Deal he's trying to push through. This is the wrong time to do it. You know, Johnson, like I said, I make the comparison. So Johnson wanted this war on poverty. He wanted to push equal rights. That's all good. But I think a war in Vietnam trumped that, okay? And it took
mm-hmm.
away from his other accomplishments. And here it is. We got Biden who's got this agenda to make us go green, and all of a sudden, he's like, he's creating more problems, and we're on the verge of World War III. One misstep, and Putin starts throwing nukes around.
There seems like there's a conflict, though, as far as priorities, and I don't think he is a wartime consigliere
right.
talking from
Absolutely.
The Godfather.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah,
that's concerning. that's concerning. And I'm glad, you know, you shared that there's some competent people, you know, that are there. But it doesn't appear to me that there's any strategy. It doesn't appear to me that there's a plan. Not that you show your
no,
cards.
No, I see a plan. I do see a plan.
Okay.
It is an economic war, all right? There is
okay.
a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is,
mm-hmm.
okay, look, dictators remain in power because because of the people that surround them. That's
mm-hmm.
going to be his military. The only people that can take out Putin is the oligarchs and the military, and he takes care of them. So how long he remains in power depends on their threshold of pain. What I mean is, how much pain can they suffer? And we're talking of these sanctions. There is a strategy. Go after the oligarchs, their yachts, take their money, make them feel pain. We can't make Putin hurt because this guy's the last person to hurt. How do we make
right.
the military hurt? Well, one is the Ukrainians are doing that for them. I mean, this is an economic war, and it's primarily targeted at the people who keep Putin in power. Want to make them feel enough pain that they're going to remove him. So yes, there is a strategy for regime change. That's about the only way this, because Putin has written articles about his vision. He wants to restore the Russian Empire. Ukraine is a part of that empire, and Ukraine is the only country that's a part of it.
The 100-hour war and the six-day war in Israel and our situation in Iraq, it seems to me, you know, that if that were the case, you know, there would be more progress. My only concern,
I'm sure you
don't know a lot that's going on there, but I don't know personally how they can continue to hold out without the backing. And I don't mean just by financial backing or sanctions or military weapons. I just think that I don't know how they can hold out against such a large army. Not that they're so formidable.
Wait, who are you talking about?
So
who's this they you're talking about?
The Ukrainians.
Ukrainians can fight as long as they have the will to resist and they have the ammunition. They can fight. Look,
so many lives
more,
have been lost already, though.
How did the Taliban beat us? Vietnam, we never lost a ground battle. How did we pull out of Vietnam? We never lost a ground battle against the Taliban. Why did we pull out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's your will to resist. It's, you know, and
yeah.
when you're the invader, you get tired. Well, it's actually not your, not the, you know, in our case, I don't think the American soldier got tired of fighting over there. It was primarily the political leadership, the moral support from home is what collapsed. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like I said, most people didn't even know we're still in Afghanistan. It wasn't on the news anymore. We could have stayed there for 10 more years. You get it down small enough, you can keep a small force there. But in the case of Ukraine, they're fighting on their own turf. How
right.
badly do they want to live free? How badly did
mm-hmm.
we want to live free in 1775 through 1783?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we weren't going to stop fighting. If the British had stayed here 10 more years, we'd still be killing them. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Everything I'm seeing about the Ukrainians, they're willing to make this another Afghanistan. But Russia can't even occupy the majority of Ukraine, so I don't think there's it's going to be that big of a deal. It's the problem is more on the Russian side. We're hearing reports of Russian mutinies, 60 paratroopers yep. mutinied. We heard of one Russian brigade, you know, drove over and killed their brigade commander for being stupid. We're seeing a lot of cracks and more problems with the Russian army than we're hearing from the Ukrainians. So, but again, the Russians could fall back, learn from their lessons, their generals wise up, they retrain their army, and it can come back stronger. That's a possibility. Now they're losing. This is 1775. You know, for the Russian army is the English army in 1775.
Yeah, I mean, I like the comparison, but I think there's a lot more at stake here and a lot different types of weapons. And I get the thing with the will, and I understand that defending your own country, you know, brings a little more to it, and especially when you're handing out weapons to able-bodied men, you know, from 18 to 60. But I just think that Putin has other things up his sleeve, and I think that he's going to do more things to devastate that country to break its will.
Yes.
I
okay.
hope not, and I pray
I'm going to agree with you on that, because you're admitting that Putin is he is not insane.
Well,
he is very calculating on what he's doing, and but I will tell you this: I read a very good article about the fall of dictators, and their hold on power is strong all the way up until they are removed.
Yeah,
so we could be surprised.
So we're gonna have to wrap it up, guys. We've got just a little over 2 minutes left. Great show, by the way, great dialogue back and forth. You know, obviously we kicked off the first half talking about the Veterans Administration and got into the war in the Ukraine and the Russians. And, you know, there are a lot of people that are evil that mm-hmm. they may not be stupid, but they are most certainly morally bankrupt and ignorant
Strange.
To humanity. I think that Putin is just a man of violence that, you know, this is just his thing. You know, I mean, I don't see him any different than any other, you know, megalomaniac, serial killer, you know, psycho, whatever you want to call it. What I do see is that, you know, what used to be done probably, you know, all the time, before the technology advanced, we see everything now. So nobody's going to be able to say, we didn't know this was going on, you know.
Right.
And I'm telling you, it's a sad situation. It most certainly is. And we've got a minute left. Father Michael, close us out in prayer, sir, and then we're going to say goodnight.
Heavenly Father, we just pray for wisdom and insight. Lord, we do pray for mercy for those innocent people. And we pray that your Holy Spirit would restrain evildoers, Lord, who would decimate and brutalize your creation. Oh God, bring peace only through Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace. We ask this in Jesus' name, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. God bless you, folks. Thank you for listening in, and have a great weekend. Good night, everybody.
Good night.